If any political figure in Oregon has a right to feel confident right now, Governor Kate Brown probably tops the list. She won re-election in November in a race that was not as close as expected, and because of term limits, she does not have to think about another election. The legislature is just getting down to a challenging agenda in Salem, and the governor just visited Southern Oregon. She sat down with JPR's Leah Moriarty for this interview.
Governor, thank you for appearing on Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just delighted to be here in Southern Oregon today.
So you just made an announcement, signed an executive order for your wildfire council. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yes. The focus of the executive order is to tackle both prevention and fire suppression efforts differently than we have in the last 100 years. And my focus is making sure that we have a collaborative effort with our federal partners and with local partners to both making sure we're doing a higher level of fire prevention work. That means maintenance, thinning, prescriptive burning, as well as tackling fire suppression efforts differently. The level of fire that we're seeing is much more fierce. It's much more ferocious and, frankly, much more frequent than we have ever. We're really at the center of a central storm that is a year of public land mismanagement on our federal lands and climate change. And these have created what has been a horrific summers for the Rogue Valley. Summers covered in smoke. It's absolutely unacceptable. We have to look at new tools. We're going to need additional resources. And frankly, we're going to have different strategies in place.
Now, when you made your announcement last November, we're talking about you'd be coming forth with this executive order. There was a certain amount of skepticism locally and more than a few people saying, basically, we don't need another study. We don't need people to look at stuff. We know what to do. We just need to get people out in the woods and start doing it. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think from my perspective, I appreciate that Southern Oregon feels like they're doing everything correctly. The harsh reality is these fires are different. We have had the worst fire season every year since I've become governor. The fires we saw in Wheatland Country, Sherman, Gillum, and Wasco County were extremely difficult. They were very hot. The volunteer firefighting team, which is literally wheat farmers, didn't have the tools they needed. Our structural firefighters didn't have the resources they needed. We need to take a look at how we are tackling fire because it is different fire than what we had 50 years ago. The other thing is prevention efforts have to be a lot more aggressive than what they have been in the past. And that's going to require more resources and more people power. So with all due respect, it's going to require a higher level of prevention on our federal public lands, and we are going to have to literally kick our federal partners in the seat of pants to make sure they're investing at a higher level than they have in the last decade.
A recent study for the legislature said Oregon has chronically underfunded its education system, and you've been making remarks along the lines of that as well. What do you see? I mean, what are you proposing to do, and how are you planning on doing that?
So my focus is around a couple of areas right now, and that is getting agreement amongst key stakeholders, teachers, parents, educators. I would also include the business community and legislators about what are the key investments we need to make to substantially transform our education system and improve educational outcomes for all of our kids. So we're working to get alignment on the vision we have for Oregon's education system. I know what I think is right, making sure we have more children ready for kindergarten, that kids show up to kindergarten ready to learn. That means adding 10,000 students this biennium to our pre-K programs. Reducing class sizes in K through 3. The data is very clear. If we can get low class sizes, kids are going to be reading by third grade. Increasing the school year, this is a national standard, 180 days. It's critically important that our kids spend more time in the classroom. So my focus is around getting alignment around that vision, and then we're going to have to figure out how we pay for it. And I liken it to the work we did around the transportation package. We had a clear convening around three priorities, and this was coming from our meetings in the communities around the state. investing in public transit, reducing congestion, and making sure that we were prepared for an earthquake event. And so we were able to, as a result of that clear agreement on priorities, come up with how we're going to fund and make investments. And that's what I'm hoping to do in our education system. The reason why we say we have failed our children is that we haven't made a significant investment in our education system. We haven't really changed or significantly invested in education since ballot measure 5, 1990. And the state dollars that went toward education were literally backfilling property taxes. And the per pupil funding hasn't significantly changed since the 1990s. So the economy is very good right now. We have the lowest unemployment rate on record, one of the fastest job growth rates in the country. Now is the time to invest. Now is the time to make sure that we are future ready.
This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. You're listening to Oregon Governor Kate Brown in an interview yesterday with JPR's Liam Moriarty.
Now, your budget calls for $400 million to address the housing shortfall in the state. If you were to get that amount, how do you see spending that?
My priorities would be around building affordable units, helping families that are struggling to pay their rent, and making sure that we're providing assistance so that more families don't end up out on the streets and our sidewalks across the state. The best thing we can do to tackling the housing issues is build more affordable units. And I am absolutely committed to getting our children and families, our veterans and the chronically homeless, making sure that they have a warm, safe, dry place to call home and that it's affordable and accessible. So I think this is the number one thing we can do. I can't solve this problem alone. It's going to take community partnerships. It's going to take the business community. It's going to take legislators. And obviously, we're hoping our federal partners will step up as well. But this would be a significant start.
Now, there's a constant discussion in Oregon's finances that makes it sound like PERS funding is going to basically swallow up everything else going forward. And force cuts, and it's already having a significant impact on local school boards and local municipal governments and that sort of thing. So how do you characterize the situation with PERS, and what's a new approach that you're hoping to take to it?
It is a significant issue for funding our basic services. As governor, I'm focused on our education system, primarily our K through 12 schools. And my goal is to figure out how we find the resources needed to stabilize employer rates for K through 12 schools. Last year, I was able to convince the legislature to invest $100 million in a side account. My budget proposes an additional $100 million. I think we need over the next several years, roughly $1 billion to stabilize employer rates for schools. This has to be a priority, not only for me, but for the legislature as well. I want to make sure that new money coming in, for example, I talked about the school improvement fund, reducing class sizes, increasing the school year, making sure we fund career and technical education, that those dollars are going into the classrooms where they're needed.
I mean, given that the state Supreme Court has limited previous efforts to restructure how we do public employment retirement system in Oregon, I mean, working within those strictures, what are you able to do, and what is just something we're going to have to live with?
Well, that's a really great question, because the challenge that we have is this unfunded actuarial liability, this $20 billion that jurisdictions around the state, from water districts to the state of Oregon, owe, is essentially a commitment we made to Oregon retirees. And the Supreme Court has been very clear. We cannot default. We cannot back down on our promises to Oregon retirees. That's why paying down the unfunded actuarial liability through tightening our belt, through putting aside every single penny that we find in the couch cushions, that's why this work is critically important, because that is what will significantly drive down employer rates in the system. I also think it's important that public employees have more skin in the game. And so we're looking at ways that public employees can share in the risks of the market. And that's legislation that's been introduced. We're continuing to fine-tune that legislation for this legislative session.
No, something that certainly hearing from Republicans who are in the minority in the legislature, that there's a lot of concern with this very ambitious agenda you've come forward with, that and there's talk of a lot of investments, and investments is another way of saying tax dollars. So what sort of revenue enhancements are we willing, we won't say tax increases, what sort of revenue enhancements would you be willing to support, and what's it going to take in order to fund the programs you're talking about?
So I'll just give an example. The Oregon Health Plan, we were able to get bipartisan support, even from local area legislators from the Republican side, to support funding for the Oregon Health Plan, which included provider tax and hospital fees to make sure that 94% of Oregonians, adult Oregonians, and now 100% of our children have access to coverage. And I think most of us would agree that healthcare is a fundamental right. And so we have to figure out how we pay for that now that federal resources coming in to support the Oregon Health Plan have been reduced. And so we know what that looks like. We have a consensus approach on the table. And I'm hoping, given the importance of healthcare and the overwhelming support that Oregonians provided with ballot measure 101 in January of 2017, that we can continue to provide stable funding for the Oregon Health Plan for a six-year period. So that's the kinds of things we're looking at, is what, particularly, for example, in the healthcare system, making sure that the provider community participates. The other two revenue streams that we have on the table include employers who are not providing health insurance to their employees, and so their employees are eligible, many of them, for the Oregon Health Plan. It seems to me to make sense to ask those employers to pay in. And then the tobacco tax. And I know certainly the tobacco tax, increased tobacco tax, hurts low-income families. The harsh reality is 2/3 of our long-term health care costs are a direct result of tobacco-related illnesses. So we work across the aisle. My goal is to, as we look at how we can make more investments, the other piece we need to do is look at cost containment. How do we make sure we're delivering state services more effectively? But I like to do it collaboratively. And my principles are to make sure that we don't put more burdens on hardworking Oregon families, and that we don't hamper or damp down our growing economy, that our businesses can continue to grow and thrive in the state.
Okay. Well, I mean, I did want to talk a little, because we've been, you know, there has been talk about new taxes. We've got super majorities in both legislative houses. And so there's been a lot of, okay, well, you know, green light.
Wait, I want to pull that back.
Okay,
so I just, the best policies in Oregon are more resilient, more reflective, and frankly, more respectful of our communities when we can bring Republicans and Democrats to the table. And I think it's important that we have a coalition, if we're looking at, you know, a specific revenue generating measure, that we have a coalition of support in order to be successful. And we know that likely, for example, we had the provider taxes for the Oregon Health Plan referred to the ballot last year as, from some conservative Republicans in the legislature. We know that by creating a consensus amongst the provider community, amongst Democrats, amongst Republicans, that we can be successful if and when something gets referred to the ballot. So I think the best policy is when Democrats and Republicans come together, and that's how I like to do business.
Well, sure. But there is, I mean, there is a lot of talk about some sort of corporate tax enhancement. You know, that was attempted at the ballot a little while ago, Measure 103. That didn't go through. But I think there is continuing talk in Salem about how we get businesses or corporations to pay a larger share of what's going on. So what are we talking about there?
So I think there are a couple of pieces. One, and I have said, frankly, we have been talking with the business community. They are certainly understand that it is time to make a significant investment in creating a seamless system of education. They understand that, at least in terms of our C-Corp, our corporate tax rate, we have one of the lowest rates in the entire country. And the legislature is going to be looking at a number of options, but I think the goal is to make sure that it's broad-based, that everyone has a little bit in the game, and that it doesn't hamper or slow down our economic growth at this point.
And do you think you're going to get sufficient buy-in from the business community on that?
I sure hope so. That's certainly what they're saying, and I'm going to hold them to their word. So, and it's time, and they know it's time. So I think one of the challenges in the conversations that's ongoing with the business community is around cost containment. You know, what are you doing to deliver services more effectively? And in my last 2 years as governor, we've been able to save nearly $500 million. I know we're not going to get any credit for that. It was work I did. It was work the legislature did. It was legislation we passed. It was belt tightening. And, but I know it's work that we need to continue doing. And as governor, I'm continuing to do that every single day. I've asked my agency directors to double down. We're looking at ways to sort of save money, making sure our agencies have auditors in-house to make sure that we're spending taxpayer dollars wisely. And we're going to continue this work. My mom, I'm the oldest of four kids. My mom taught me to squeeze every bit of toothpaste out of the tube. And that's exactly what I'm going to do with your taxpayer dollars.
One more question, if I could, before we wrap up. You've talked a great deal about campaign finance reform. You've talked about our current lack of campaign finance regulations in Oregon as being the wild, wild west. And given that the state Supreme Court has shot down previous efforts to limit donations and that sort of thing, where can we go from there?
That's a great question. And holy smokes, it is like the wild, wild west. No one person should be able to buy a megaphone so loud that it drowns out all the other voices. And frankly, that's what folks attempted to do in this last gubernatorial election. Where we need to go, it will require a constitutional amendment. That means amending Article 1, Section 8, our free speech clause, or Article 2, Section 8. Fortunately for the Rogue Valley, Senator Jeff Golden is chairing the committee on the Senate side for campaign finance reform, and I hope that we can move forward on a constitutional amendment, which will require a vote of the Oregonians. But I have to say, that's not where we need to stop. We need to continue to shine a light on all the other dark money that's being spent in Oregon politics. One business organization spent millions of dollars. I have no clue who they are and what they wanted. And we've got to continue to enhance our transparency efforts. And I look forward to partnering with Senator Golden on that and other issues that we need to tackle in our campaign finance system.
Governor, thank you so much for being with us on Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you so much.